Former President Trump back in court for his so-called hush money trial. We have more on the witnesses testifying today.
The House Judiciary Committee is in Philadelphia hearing stories from the families of victims of violent crimes. Our reporter Luis Martinez is there.
Police are moving in to clear anti-Israel encampments at more college campuses. See footage of their latest operations.
The House panel wants to know if TikTok violated child protection laws when it launched a campaign asking users to pressure Congress not to ban the app.
The State Department issues a travel advisory to Americans in Germany, warning tourists of the risks of potential terrorist attacks.
In horse racing, the fastest 2 minutes in sports is just a day away. NTD's Dave Martin joins us to explain what makes this event such an American tradition.
This is NTD News Today, live from our NTD global headquarters. Here are Stephania Cox and Chris Beers.
Former President Trump heads back to a Manhattan courtroom today as the second week of testimony in his campaign fundraising trial is set to wrap up.
Former Trump aide Hope Hicks is now taking the stand. Here's the former president on his way into court.
Can I stop you from testifying?
No, you won't stop me from testifying. The gag order is not for testifying. The gag order stops me from talking about people and responding when they say things about me. We have people saying things about me, and I'm not allowed to respond. So this judge has taken away my constitutional right. And as the Republican candidate and somebody that's leading Biden by a lot, I should be able to respond. But this guy's got me with a gag order. Now, we're filing, I think today, a constitutional motion to get this out. We'll be filing a lawsuit on the constitutionality of it. But if somebody says something about me and I'm not allowed to respond, that's never happened before. Thank you. Thank you.
Hicks is the former White House communications director under Trump. She worked on Trump's 2016 campaign and was accused of suppressing negative stories about him.
Earlier this morning, forensics expert Douglas Doss wrapped up his testimony.
Doss focused on the content of former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen's phone. That included texts and messages, mostly from 2016.
Trump's defense lawyers questioned how reliable this data is and whether the phone could have been reset. Doss didn't review the cell phone data until 2023. And we have some breaking news. The accounting firm that Trump's media group uses is being charged with fraud.
BF Borgers is the Trump Media and Technology Group's independent accounting firm. The Securities and Exchange Commission is alleging massive fraud impacting more than 1,500 filings from January 2021 to June 2023.
Trump Media is one among some 350 clients of BF Borgers during the time period in question. The SEC didn't allege any wrongdoing against Trump Media and didn't mention the company in the charges.
The SEC accused BF Borgers of deliberate and systemic failures, including fabricating audit documentation and falsely representing to clients that its work would comply with accounting standards.
BF Borgers agreed to pay a $12 million civil penalty, and its owner agreed to pay a $2 million civil penalty.
The SEC permanently suspended the firm from practicing as accountants before the agency, effective immediately. Public companies that have hired BF Borgers will need to find new accounting firms.
And Trump Media announced plans to do just that. A Trump Media spokesperson confirmed today it will be working with new auditing partners.
And anti-Israel encampments on college campuses. Police are moving in to clear more of them.
So far, more than 2,000 people have been arrested for anti-Israel college protests nationwide.
Since this morning, the NYPD has been clearing the anti-Israel encampment at New York University and the New School. Both schools had deemed the encampments illegal and requested police assistance.
Police arrested over 50 people at the two schools, and in Oregon, police moved in to clear Portland State University's library, which had been occupied by protesters for a second time.
Some 30 people were arrested. This brings the total number of protesters arrested nationwide at college campuses to 2,000. Several California Republican lawmakers said violent student protesters should lose their financial aid.
And the Houthis in Yemen, who are backed by Iran, said they are offering a place at their own school for students suspended from U.S. universities. The White House has clarified remarks made Wednesday evening by President Biden. He called Japan and India xenophobic countries that do not welcome immigrants. Biden lumped the two countries with China and Russia and contrasted the four with the U.S. on immigration.
Look, I think the broader point the president was making, and I think people all around the world recognize this, that the United States is a nation of immigrants, and it's in our DNA. We're better for it, we're stronger for it, and we're not going to walk away from it. And that's the broader point that he was making, that our allies and partners know well and in tangible ways how President Biden values them, their friendship, their cooperation, and the capabilities that they bring across the spectrum on a range of issues, not just security related.
The president made the remark during a fundraiser in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday.
He argued that Japan, along with Russia and China, would perform better economically if the countries embraced immigration. Biden pointed to immigration as one reason why the U.S. economy is growing.
Meanwhile, Japan has largely shied away from using immigration to bolster its population. And as more anti-Israel protests sweep across college campuses in America, one legal scholar intends to take legal action against protesters, professors, and colleges.
Famed attorney Alan Dershowitz spoke about his plan with NTD's Kelly Wright, the host of America's Hope.
Alan, as you see these protests continuing to take place throughout America, pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, death to Israel, death to America, what is going through your mind as you watch all of this unfold?
Well, let's remember that the biggest supporters of these riots is Iran. Iran, the head of Iran, wrote a letter commending these thugs, these Hitler youth who are calling for the end of the Jews. And of course, Iran would commend them. Hamas has commended them. And when you have Iran and Hamas on your side, you know you must be doing something very, very wrong. These are radical, anarchistic, anti-American young people who have no knowledge of what's going on. I'll give you an example. Some of the students are calling for a ceasefire. Do any of them know that Israel offered a ceasefire and that the Secretary of State said the only thing that stands between the civilians in Hamas and a ceasefire, the civilians in Gaza and a ceasefire, is Hamas? It's all Hamas's fault. The deaths are Hamas's fault. They use human shields. The hunger is Hamas's fault. They won't allow food to come in without them stealing it. But these kids are utter ignoramuses, and the faculty are the worst because they're the ones who have been propagandizing these kids for years and years and years. What really concerns me, because I have experience in this, I represented a lot of the protesters in the 60s and 70s. These protesters, some of them, will become terrorists. They are being groomed by Hamas. Hamas will ask them to plant bombs. They will do it, and it's coming to a theater near you.
What are you doing from your legal perspective to take action against those who have rallied to these protests, even threatening and actually physically harming some of the Jewish students attending these colleges?
We're starting a new group called Hurt a Jew, We Sue You, and we will sue individuals, not the universities. Others are doing that. But we will sue 19-year-olds and 20-year-olds who are blocking access to classes. And we will sue them and get their scholarships. And we will sue them and get their cars. We will sue them and get their boomboxes. We will sue them for every penny they have, because you cannot get away with hurting a Jew today in America. And too many prosecutors are allowing them to get away. We don't control prosecutors, but we do control lawsuits. If we file a lawsuit, it has to go forward. And we will do that. We'll get discovery. We'll find out who's financing these protests. We'll find out the role of George Soros, the role of the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, the role of Peter Beinhart, who's on the Rockefeller Fund and doesn't believe Israel has the right to exist as the nation state of the Jewish people. So we're going to get to the bottom of this through lawsuits.
You can see more of Kelly Wright's interview with Alan Dershowitz when America's Hope airs it tonight at 10 p.m. here on NTD.
Coming up, Arkansas is pushing back on the Biden administration's expansion of Title IX protections to include students identifying as transgender. More on a new executive order from the state's governor.
And the Biden administration is expanding health care access to illegal immigrants who are part of the DACA program. More in just a moment here on NTD News Today.
The economy added just 175,000 jobs last month, according to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's much less than economists were expecting and the slowest growth since October. Economists have been anticipating a slowdown in the labor market from the pressure of high interest rates.
Meanwhile, the unemployment rate ticked higher to 3.9%. April marked the 27th consecutive month the jobless stayed under 4%, a streak last seen in the 1960s. Senate GOP campaign chief Senator Steve Daines is dampening expectations for the November elections. Daines says his goal is to flip just two seats to take control of the Senate, despite a favorable-looking map.
Republicans could win the majority by winning two seats or by winning one seat and having former President Trump win again.
Republicans are focused on four key races: Pennsylvania, Maryland, Montana, and Ohio. West Virginia is also considering promising after Senator Joe Manchin's retirement.
Senator Rick Scott from Florida, who used to lead the National Republican Senatorial Committee, had much higher hopes back in 2022. He predicted the party would not just win the majority in 2022, but could even get more than 55 seats.
Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders is defying the Biden administration's expansion of Title IX protections. Title IX now includes students identifying as transgender. Sanders issued an executive order yesterday saying the state plans to preserve the traditional understanding of sex as firmly rooted in biology. The order states that the government should celebrate, not erase, sex differences by providing proper protections for them. It also states that the Biden administration, quote, has rejected reality and chosen to appease their left-wing base over students' safety and best interests.
President Biden is extending Affordable Care Act coverage to include Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, recipients. In a new federal regulation, the administration is modifying the definition of lawfully present so thousands of so-called dreamers can get access to certain health care coverage.
DACA allows immigrants brought to the U.S. illegally as children to live and work legally in the country.
Health and Human Services estimates that 100,000 uninsured DACA recipients will likely take advantage of the new rule. It takes effect November 1st.
This is the latest effort by Biden to strengthen DACA as a comprehensive immigration reform has stalled in Congress.
And today, President Biden is presenting the Medal of Freedom to 19 political allies, celebrities, and civil rights leaders. The list includes former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, South Carolina Representative Jim Clyburn, actress Michelle Yeoh, and former Vice President Al Gore. Biden is also presenting the award to three posthumous recipients. Those include World War II soldier and civil rights leader Medgar Evers, former senator and environmental advocate Frank Lautenberg, and Olympic athlete Jim Thorpe. The Medal of Freedom is the nation's highest civilian honor. It's presented to people who have made exemplary contributions to the country, to world peace, or to other significant societal endeavors.
Members of Congress are asking if TikTok violated child protection laws in its effort to stop a U.S. ban on the app. A letter is asking the Federal Trade Commission to investigate.
The app sent users pop-up messages asking for personal information and requesting they contact Congress.
Members of the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party say the message was sent to young children. A letter the committee sent out says TikTok's actions resulted in at least one case of a child calling an office of Congress and threatening suicide.
TikTok sent out the messages right before the passage of a law that forces the company's Chinese owner to sell the app or face a ban in U.S. app stores. In the letter, members of Congress expressed concern that an app controlled by the Chinese Communist Party appears to have the ability to manipulate the American public, including children.
TikTok's response was that it only sent the message to users over the age of 18 who could dismiss the message notification. The U.S. military has admitted that it mistakenly killed a civilian in an airstrike in Syria last year. This comes after the man was initially misidentified as a senior Al-Qaeda leader. An investigation ordered by U.S. Central Command found several issues with the airstrike, but it didn't detail those issues in the report released on Thursday, noting that many facts about the investigation remain classified. Questions about who was actually killed in the airstrike were raised almost immediately after it happened last May. The man's family insisted he was not an Al-Qaeda leader, but a farmer and a father of 10. The U.S. launched an official investigation about 8 weeks later.
And Senator Lindsey Graham said Wednesday that the FBI is now in possession of his phone after he was contacted by someone impersonating Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Graham discussed what happened at a meeting on artificial intelligence regulation. He said anything that can be created can be hacked.
Graham's office didn't say what kind of phone he owns. It also didn't specify whether it was a call or a text message that caused the issues.
In a statement to NBC, the senator's spokesperson said the sergeant at arms is investigating a possible hack of Graham's phone.
New Hampshire is poised to become the next state to ban marriage to anyone under the age of 18. A bill banning what is commonly referred to as child marriage passed yesterday in the state. Currently, only 12 states prohibit adults from marrying someone under the age of 18. Most limit it to 16 or 17, while 7 states have no restrictions at all. In Kansas and Hawaii, the minimum age is 15. The restrictions also apply to minors marrying minors. Advocates for ending marriage to a minor argued that allowing it contradicts statutory rape laws and is a form of sex trafficking. Those opposed argue it should be allowed in cases of an unintended pregnancy for emancipated minors or when parental consent is given. A crash on Interstate 95 in Connecticut will keep the road closed in both directions. 3 vehicles collided yesterday morning, one carrying gasoline. A fire erupted and engulfed the fuel tanker, which traveled across the road as the flames reached up toward an overpass.
Troop G was made aware of a 3-vehicle accident that occurred involving a passenger vehicle and 2 tractor trailers, one of them being a tanker truck carrying fuel oil. One occupant in each vehicle, so three people involved total. No one was injured.
The bridge was damaged. The heat from the burning fuel compromised some of the bridge. So that bridge is going to have to come down. Then they're going to have to take a second look at repaving to make sure that the road is safe and secure.
The governor says both sides of the interstate should be back open by Monday. He says he filed an emergency declaration so the federal government can pay for the overpass replacement.
The Associated Press reported that the tanker was carrying around 8,500 gallons of gasoline. Traffic jams were heavy after the crash, and the local government is advising drivers to take alternative routes.
This crash comes about a year after another fuel truck crashed in Connecticut, killing a driver.
Lahaina and Maui is receiving $362 million for fire recovery efforts. The governor of Hawaii signed legislation on Thursday.
Governor Josh Green says the funding package will help in several ways. It will compensate victims of the fire, temporarily lift some restrictions on use of funds, and give power to shut down illegal short-term rentals.
The Lahaina fire last August killed 101 people and caused over $6 billion in damage.
And over a dozen police vehicles were damaged or destroyed by a suspected arsonist in Portland, Oregon, early Thursday morning. Police say 15 vehicles were found on fire in a fenced-in training area around 2 in the morning. There was no damage to the building and no injuries were reported.
Police suspect arson, and they say it's being investigated separately from the nearby protest on campus of Portland State University. However, they said it may be connected.
And most of us enjoy being able to sleep in. However, you probably wouldn't like the extra shut-eye if it was a result of not hearing your alarm clock. Some iPhone users have turned to social media with that very complaint, saying they overslept because they're not hearing the alarm.
Apple told NBC News that the company is working to fix the issue. However, it is unknown how many iPhone users are affected.
In the meantime, some users say that turning off the attention aware feature has helped solve the problem. The feature allows an iPhone to check whether someone's looking at their device, and if they are, the phone will lower the sound of the alerts.
Apple says on its website that the Do Not Disturb setting and putting the phone on silent does not affect the alarm sounds.
More on Apple. The company is facing some growing pains, and it's making a historic move to make it through.
The company has announced a $110 billion share buyback, the largest in its history. Also on Thursday, Apple posted a first quarter revenue of nearly $91 billion. That's down 4% year over year.
The iPhone maker is struggling with growth challenges, particularly in China, amid an uncertain economic environment. Apple says iPhone sales have sunk by 10%.
After Apple's revenue report, its shares rose past 6% in after-hours trading.
Coming up, the State Department issues a travel advisory to Americans in Germany. Why the alert urges tourists to be aware of potential terrorist attacks.
Russian state affiliate accounts increase their presence on TikTok. A recent study by Brookings Institute details Moscow's efforts. We'll have the details soon when we return.
The House Judiciary Committee today held a field hearing in the city of Philadelphia. Lawmakers heard testimony from experts and family members of victims of violent crime.
Our correspondent Luis Martinez joins us live with more on this field hearing. Luis, give us an update here.
Chris, Steph, good afternoon. Yes, I'm right here in front of Independence Hall, and in front of me is the William J. Green Federal Building, where the House Judiciary Committee just held its field hearing on the victims of violent crime here in the city of Philadelphia. But House Republicans also focused, laser focused in this hearing, on what they called the pro-criminal lenient policies of Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner. Let's listen to what Chairman Jim Jordan, Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, had to say about DA Larry Krasner.
Simply put, Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner is failing to prosecute criminals. Since his tenure began, Krasner's office has consistently declined to prosecute crimes in the city. Notably, the policies include not seeking cash bail for most cases, considering a defendant's immigration status in the plea bargaining process, and not prosecuting crimes like prostitution or marijuana possession.
Congressman Jim Jordan, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, also highlighted how during Larry Krasner, Philadelphia DA's first term that started in 2018, homicide rates in Philadelphia increased by 78%. Also during his first term, Larry Krasner instructed his attorneys not to prosecute with felonies or misdemeanors those criminals caught shoplifting merchandises under $500, what Republicans call pro-criminal lenient policies. We also heard from experts, one of them, Nick Garaci, a former Philadelphia police officer who called the DA a serial killer by proxy. Let's listen to what Nick Garaci, former police officer of Philadelphia, had to say.
One person is the result of the death of the murder of more than 12 people. He prioritizes the pursuit of his ideological agenda over public safety. Let Him Go Larry has put the lives of Philadelphia residents at risk, or Uncle Larry, as the criminal underground in Philadelphia refers to him. So
Chris, Steph, we also heard from family members of victims of violent crimes here in Philadelphia. Their testimony was that their family members would still be alive had Larry Krasner, the DA of Philadelphia, had more severe policies towards criminals here in Philadelphia.
Luis, this field hearing is a bipartisan effort. Do both parties share concern for what's happening in Philadelphia?
Well, of course, the House Judiciary Committee is led by Republicans. It was them who established this field hearing, as well as others in the past few months. House Democrats were not in agreement with having the field hearing here in Philadelphia. Actually, ranking member Jared Nadler, the Democrat from New York, lamented that they weren't working in Washington, D.C., legislating on other affairs. Let's listen to what Democratic ranking member Jared Nadler had to say about this.
Our time would be better spent again back in D.C., passing bills that can help support Philadelphia and all our communities to be safer places for every American.
So competing statistics were thrown around between House Republicans and House Democrats. Before I mentioned that during Larry Krasner's first term in office, homicides increased by 78%. But then ranking member Jared Nadler noted that from 2022 to 2023, homicides decreased by 20%. Ranking member Nadler also highlighted that Larry Krasner, the DA of Philadelphia, was reelected in 2021 with over 70% of support, noting that Philadelphians are happy, according to that result, with his policies. But we also heard from a Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon, who actually had very strong words for what she called a moving circus. She called that Congressman Jim Jordan was taking the House Judiciary Committee on a traveling circus tour. Let's listen to what Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon had to say.
Instead, he's brought his traveling circus to town in order to divide Americans, scare voters, influence elections, and distract from the crushing failure of the House majority to govern.
Despite the competing statistics presented by both House Republicans and House Democrats, the truth is that in Philadelphia last year, more than 400 people were murdered violently. That is actually four times the rate that people are murdered in cities like New York that have four times the population. So, of course, some issues of serious concern with experts, family members being questioned by both Democrats and House Republicans. But that's all we have for today here from Philadelphia. Behind us, beautiful Independence Hall. Back to you, Chris and Steph.
All right, Luis Martinez in Philadelphia, thank you for that coverage.
And now shifting gears, we have some short headlines from the UK, Germany, and other European countries. The State Department has issued a travel warning to Americans traveling in Germany. Yesterday's alert informed tourists to be aware of potential terrorist attacks.
According to the travel advisory, terror groups continue to plan attacks in Germany. It warned that terrorists target tourist locations and transportation hubs.
The warning listed markets, shopping malls, government buildings, hotels, clubs, and restaurants as potential targets. Attacks on places of worship, parks, and major sporting and cultural events are also possible.
The State Department has advised Americans to be aware of their surroundings, listen to the instructions of local authorities, and follow local media.
British Foreign Secretary David Cameron has promised Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky $3.7 billion of annual military aid for Ukraine. The two leaders met yesterday in Kyiv.
Cameron led the UK from 2010 to 2016 as Prime Minister. The British Conservative only returned to the front lines of political politics several months ago.
He also met Ukraine's foreign minister on his second visit to Kyiv as foreign secretary and celebrated the $60 billion aid package from the U.S. Russia is making itself heard on TikTok. According to a recent study by the Brookings Institution, Russian state-affiliated accounts have boosted their presence on the video platform ahead of the U.S. presidential election.
Such accounts are also active on other social media platforms and have a larger presence on Telegram and X. However, users' engagement, including likes, views, and shares on their posts, has been much higher on TikTok.
According to the study, most posts focus on the war in Ukraine and NATO instead of U.S. politics.
The posts about the U.S. are aimed to be divisive. They include topics like Washington's policy toward Israel and Russia and concerns about President Biden's age.
Britain's opposition Labour Party won a parliamentary seat in northern England today and control of several councils. The governing Conservatives experienced heavy losses, piling more pressure on Prime Minister Rishi Sunak.
The victory set the tone for what will be a closely watched 2 days of local results. Voters cast their ballots yesterday for more than 2,000 local seats across England.
A handful of high-profile mayoral elections took place as well, including in the capital, London. Polling shows Labour leader Keir Starmer could win this year's national election.
Sunak's Conservatives are about 20 percentage points behind Labour in most polls. A defeat for the incumbent would end 14 years of Conservative government.
And turning now to the space race heating up between the U.S. and China. China today launched a lunar probe. The new move could boost Beijing's efforts to achieve its space ambitions. China's unmanned mission aims to land on the far side of the moon for the first time and return with samples. Beyond that, scientific instruments from France, Italy, Pakistan, and the European Space Agency are all hitchhiking on China's spacecraft.
The U.S. skipped the application to get a spot. China is banned by U.S. law from any collaboration with NASA.
The U.S. is still leading the lunar race. 3 months ago, the U.S. private company Intuitive Machines landed on the moon.
China aims to bring humans to the moon by 2030. NASA plans to land astronauts on the moon in 2026, for the first time in over a half century. And the U.S. and three key allies are vowing to deepen cooperation in the wake of China's aggressions in the South China Sea. Defense ministers from the U.S., Australia, Japan, and the Philippines gathered in Hawaii on Thursday. This is what the Japanese defense minister said during a joint news conference. Watch.
We, the four countries, strongly oppose any attempt to unilaterally change the status quo by force in the South China Sea and any action that could escalate tensions.
During the conference, Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin said Beijing's recent aggression in the South China Sea is irresponsible behavior and disregards international law. Earlier this week, the Chinese Coast Guard fired water cannons at two Philippine vessels, damaging both ships. Other incidents have injured crew members.
The Philippines and the U.S., along with Australia and Japan, and held their first joint naval exercises in the South China Sea last month. The U.S. Defense Chief stressed the importance of the drills, and the Australian Defense Chief said the four talked about increasing the tempo of the exercises.
Although the U.S. has no territorial claims to the South China Sea, Washington sees freedom of navigation and flight in the international waters as America's national interest.
China claims almost the entire South China Sea, but an international ruling in 2016 said Beijing has no right to do so.
Coming up in horse racing, the fastest 2 minutes in sports is just a day away. NTD's Dave Martin joins us to explain what makes this event such an American tradition.
And Ukrainians gather in Kyiv to paint traditional Ukrainian Easter eggs. They're hoping the craft can be recognized officially by UNESCO.
Michelangelo was an awe-inspiring Renaissance genius. A London exhibition is showcasing the later years of his life. More on the last decades of Michelangelo's life and work when we come back.
And now for your sports news, we're joined by NTD's Dave Martin. Dave, a big night in the NBA playoffs. Both the Bucks and the 76ers were eliminated. Milwaukee was expected to compete for the NBA title. What happened?
Yeah, some very untimely injuries. Both Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard, really their two superstar players, missed either part or all of this series with injuries. Yet both are really healthy for the vast majority of the regular season, so it was a very unfortunate timing for them. Now, last night, Lillard was able to tough it out, played with an injured Achilles, but it wasn't enough. They lost to Indiana. They are eliminated from the playoffs. And on the second game last night, the Knicks beat the Sixers in Philadelphia to close out that series. It was a crazy series, really. All the last-minute heroics that decided the game. Knicks star guard Jalen Brunson was impossible to guard last night in Philadelphia. He finished with his third straight 40-point game, the first Knick to do so in the playoffs in like 40 years. And Bernard King was the last one. So now Indiana will face New York in the second round.
And we'll be hearing that update from you, I'm sure. Moving on to golf news, Tiger Woods will accept a special exemption to play in the U.S. Open this June. What are the exceptions for him after his last place performance at the Masters? Kind of hard to see that, at least, you know, among those who made the cut.
Yeah, you know, the expectations for him, I think they're kind of low going forward. I mean, you know, it should be said that him finishing four rounds of a major is an accomplishment for him now after that horrific car accident 3 years ago, which he nearly lost his leg. And like you said, he did make the cut at the Masters, which is another step. But then his weekend performance there was well below what we're used to seeing from him. I mean, his total score of 304 was his worst ever as a pro in a 72-hole event. Now, up next for him will actually be the PGA Championship. That's later this month. Now, Woods has said he'd like to do one event per month, which makes it likely he'll also do the Open Championship in Scotland in July. So that will be four majors in 4 months. So I think this by the middle of the summer, we'll have a very good idea of where he's at.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that he's playing at all is a testament to his surgeon.
Yeah.
The 150th running of the Kentucky Derby is coming up. What makes this, the particular horse race, so interesting here?
You know, I think it's a number of things. It's a whole day event, really, for those who attend. I mean, the race itself, it's over in the blink of an eye. I mean, it's known as the fastest 2 minutes in sports, and that's about as long as it takes for it to be run. The winner gets that huge blanket of hundreds of roses, very unique. In fact, the race has also been nicknamed the Run for the Roses. It's a big socialite event, too, you know. Churchill Downs is a very glorious-looking place. Queen Elizabeth II used to attend this. It's also very unique that you only have one chance to run it because this race is only for three-year-old horses. Of course, also a lot of money changes hands here. There's a $5 million total purse. More than $3 million goes to the winner. Now, the two big betting favorites for tomorrow's race are Fierceness at 2.5-1 odds and Sierra Leone at 3-1.
All right, Dave Martin, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you guys.
Cheers.
When life gets on top of you, it's time to take a moment to de-stress. Gina Marie has 5 easy tips. Here's Strong Mind and Body.
You probably hear a lot about how diet and lifestyle can help to relieve stress and anxiety. But you can't exactly go for a run or take a power nap at a moment's notice. When stress hits, sometimes you need to calm your nerves fast. Here are a few things that you can do to take the edge off, starting with 1, focused breathing. Take a moment to step back from what's causing you stress and recalibrate. Remove yourself from the situation by going somewhere quiet and starting to breathe. Take long, deep breaths and allow nothing to break your concentration. 2, guided imagery. Closing your eyes and daydreaming for 5 minutes can be an effective stress relief tool. Visualize yourself being somewhere or doing something you enjoy. It can be a fantasy or memory, but just lock into it and transport yourself. 3, movement. Getting up and doing a quick 5-minute walk or even just pacing around your house can help. But if exercise makes you anxious, you can follow up with a yoga move called the tree pose. Stand up straight, then breathe and focus on bending one knee to lift your foot off the ground. Rest the heel of that foot against the inner thigh of your other leg. Close your eyes and breathe deeply for a minute before switching. 4, repeat a mantra. If the guided breathing isn't helping you, try to recite a mantra. This could be one word, a hum, a phrase, a prayer, or something affirming. 5, look out the window or get outside. Stepping outside to sit somewhere that provides solace can help to knock stress down a notch. If you can't get outside, take a look through the window and take in the view. The sight of smiling people, a blue sky, or some leaves glistening in the sun can produce calm. When time is of the essence, try these or a combination of them to regulate and refocus.
Ukrainians gathered in Kyiv today to paint traditional Ukrainian Easter eggs. Participants hope to add the craft to UNESCO's World List of Intangible Cultural Heritage. NTD's Andrew Thomas has that story.
People from across Ukraine came together to paint more than 800 traditional Easter eggs. Ukrainians call them pisankas.
I can't say that I decided to take on the craft of painting pisankas. I decided to try. I saw it on TV, how people were painting with this instrument. I don't know the right name for it. I have never tried, but it is interesting to try.
For many, the art form is more important than ever amid war with Russia.
We as Ukrainians have no right to lose heart. We must support the crafts passed from our ancestors, like painting pisankas. Soon there will be Christ's resurrection. It will raise spirits and it will send us peace. There will be victory. We, Hutzels, feel that victory is on its way.
All have gathered to help the art form earn a spot on UNESCO's World List of Intangible Cultural Heritage. Marina Sobotsuk helped organize the event.
In 7 hours, we painted 850 pisankas. People from 50 regions of Ukraine came here today to make a festival of pisanka to support Ukraine's UNESCO bid to recognize the tradition of painting pisankas as non-material cultural heritage. So we decided to support the bid with the record and with this event to preserve our identity, which fights for territorial integrity.
Professional painter Paraska Plitarok says making pisanka isn't only a craft. It's a way to keep her spirits up as Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine drags into its third year.
When the war broke out, probably everyone was shocked for the first 2 weeks. For 2 weeks, I couldn't take a pen in my hand. I didn't paint. Then my clients started calling me, the ones that order pisankas throughout the year. I paint all year round. They started supporting me, saying, Paraska, it's not the end of the world. You must paint.
Ukrainians will celebrate Orthodox Easter this Sunday. Andrew Thomas, NTD News.
A new exhibition exploring the last decades of Michelangelo's life and work is opening in London. The prolific artist continued to produce art right up to the final days of his life.
Michelangelo is the soaring talent behind the awe-inspiring ceiling of the Sistine Chapel and a statue of David. But this new exhibition at the British Museum wants to look at a different period of his life, his older years.
It's easy for people to forget that he goes on working until the age of almost 89. And the later works show quite a different side to him, much more introspective, much more thoughtful.
Religious iconography plays a huge part in the exhibition, perhaps reflecting the artist's faith and his contemplation of his own mortality.
We get to see more of him as a person coming to terms with these very universal human feelings that we all face as we get older, trying to weigh up if you've lived a good life and meditating on aspects of faith which he hopes will bring him to salvation.
The show includes some rare gems. The 2-metre-high Epiphania is on public display for the first time since restoration began on it in 2018.
It is of unique distinction today because the cartoon Michelangelo makes, the one-to-one drawing, the blueprint essentially, is the only cartoon, complete cartoon, that survives in Michelangelo's hand.
Visitors can see early workings of some of his famous compositions, like studies for figures that would eventually appear in The Last Judgment, a fresco covering the altar of the Sistine Chapel. Then there are black chalk and lead white drawings made shortly before his death, decades later, which show how his style had evolved with age.
He becomes slightly more interested in the spiritual interior of the figures that he represents. The figures often become a little more compact, a little more dense and weighty. At the same time, when he is dealing with the figure of Christ, for example, it can become quite light, almost ethereal.
His letters give an insight into Michelangelo's life beyond the art. He writes to his nephew to thank him for wine sent from the family farm. One letter, written on his behalf, bears what is said to be Michelangelo's last known signature, 4 days before his death.
Increasingly, that beautiful handwriting starts to become more and more shaky. And I find it very, very moving when you look at the last signature, to see a hand that had, you know, glided a pen across a sheet of paper with such effortless virtuosity, even struggling to write his own name.
A sketch of his plans for the dome of the Vatican's St. Peter's Basilica shows his design abilities were as sharp as ever, even though he likely knew he would never live to see its construction. Michelangelo, The Last Decades, opens on Thursday and runs until the end of July.
For round-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app.
And be sure to stick around for NTD Newsroom at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll cover more stories from the U.S. and around the world.